So the second problem, not only nationalism, but even the principle of decentralization and neglect of the individual. So second problem. Third problem was that Roman Empire tried to impose one language and one culture, and thus it disregarded the value of diversity. Finally, Roman Empire relied more on administrative power for unifying the empire instead of underlying the value of culture. These were the main reasons why Roman Empire failed. And these are the very problems which now will confront mankind. The human tendency is to unite by imposing uniformity. You want to start a college? Give one syllabus to everybody, one examination system to everybody, one lecture system, which will be economically viable, efficient, standardized, and will get products out of the university, which are all standardized individuals. This is the aim. Human beings tend toward this kind of a solution. It's automatic in human mind. This is a mistake of human mind, but this mistake is automatic. It does not consider that the real roots of strength is in the law of liberty and diversity. It is that law that Sri Aurobindo emphasizes. The law of liberty and diversity. We have one very important chapter in the Ideal of Community, which is chapter number 17, which is entitled Nature's Law in Our Progress. Nature's Law in Our Progress. Dash. Unity in Diversity. Comma. Law and Liberty. So you have to have one chapter. This will be your fourth chapter.
Isn't the peril greater today in the sense that there will be no reinforcement by rule like in the Roman Empire? But today it is a voluntary uniformity in a way, because the education is also uniform and trying to adopt cultures to be one. Isn't that thing become much more prominent now, voluntarily?
It's not voluntary. Human beings today tend to think in a collective manner on the lines of uniformity. It's not voluntary.
But isn't the individualism not so much in the forefront?
Why is it not forefront?
Because of this process which I...
Yeah, this is why. It is not voluntary.
But to awaken, there is
a process. You see, what happens is that usually in any social progress, there are bound to be leaders. If you are a real politician, you must know the role of leaders in society. Now, these leaders confront problems. a normal tendency, not a deliberate tendency, but normal tendency, immediate answer. It's like a mother having 5 children. You have to manage a household. How will you do it? Go to the market, buy the cloth for all the 5 children, the same kind of cloth. It's a natural tendency. She's a leader and she's a problem. All the children have to be clothed. How efficiently, easily, comfortably will you do it? You won't try to consult every child and say, you like green, you like white. Human tendency is to seek solutions easily. And human beings immediately feel into the trap of uniformity. Now today, for example, there is a great tendency towards globalization. Nobody can stop it. Why? Because of 2 important factors on which money has no control. Transport and communication. Nobody, no human being has done just like, it's a kind of a force of nature. It has produced transport and communication. What can you do about it? It has its own logic. The moment I travel to California, I see that world over there. And I want to create California here, in my own country. Natural tendency, how beautiful. My India should be California. See, globalization has a natural tendency toward uniform. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that turn to unity is inevitable. That is why also the force of nationalism is being now downplayed. Today, when you speak of nationalism, so that old idea of nationalism. Already it is passé.
Because of World War II, people think it's an even more...
Yes, quite true, because Germany rose up as a nationalist country. As a nationalist country.
In today's world, sir, I see 3 forces which are deliberately trying to create uniformity. One is Islam, and second is America. Islam wants the entire globe to be Islamic. America wants the entire globe to have those values
which America likes.
So if it goes in Iraq, it wants to create Iraq as America. Or on the
values. So same thing they've done. Philippines have done the same thing.
Yeah. Vietnam, they wanted to do the same thing. They failed miserably. Cuba, they wanted to do the same thing. So, politically also they want that the whole world should be organized in a way in which they themselves are. Very true. The whole world should uphold those values.
Very true, yeah, right.
Which are the values of the founding fathers of America.
Exactly.
So, that is also a very deliberate attempt of their foreign policy.
Very true.
So, all these ideals of America and the culture of America should spread, and they should make it spread, even if their companies become the brand ambassadors, it should spread. And human beings, when they see something successful,
they want to
imitate. They think that is right.
Because this is a normal tendency of human nature.
So that is why individualism is more of followership rather than being individual.
That was the question. You clarified it much more. Right? There are hardly people, uncle, who have the mettle to be individualistic, to hold on their own. Because this is something that struck me with such a thing. What you're saying is like that the brands of watches on every wrist, you can identify a branded watch in an evening out. Because it's just falling in line. It's not that it's beautiful or anything. That's because it's branded, it's on the wrist. I don't know what's the cure for this,
Uncle. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that there are dangers. He spoke of Islam, but also Christianity also has the same problem.
And actually, after Roman Empire, Christianity tried to do the same.
Yeah.
Islam tried to do the same.
That's right.
Before that, Judaism, they tried to do the same. Only, I believe, the Eastern cultures, let us say, or the Southeast, South Asian, and even China. But this tendency to unify greatly arose in Chinese Empire also. And then this revolution, entire revolution, was based on that uniformity model.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And even Marxism was uniformity.
Right, right. Absolutely.
So, other than India, I believe there is no country in this whole world.
No, even India does not understand Indian polity. Today's India is not very wise. Rishi's very wise. The stakeholders of the Indian polity, that India did a great contribution to the real cause of unity, not of uniformity. Why? It established first the cultural unity of India. And this cultural unity respected the law of liberty of individual and the law of diversity. It is ingrained in India. It of course produced a lot of fissiparous tendencies in the history of India. There have been so many quarrels, small kingdoms fighting against each other. And yet India has remained one, despite all this. Why? Because it allowed Rajasthani culture to develop, Gujarati culture to develop, Assamese culture to develop, and yet understood how to bring about unity. Unity is difficult because you must have something universal. Universal means one. One is uniform. So how to synthesize one and many? This is the alchemy, which in India has been achieved right from ancient times. It's a great achievement of Indian culture. The one in the whole world, where diversity, individuality, our whole life is a great example of experiment in uniformity and unity, diversity. There is oneness. I mean, there is oneness in India. What is that oneness? When you ask the question, what is oneness in India? It's very difficult to find. Even if you say it is belief in God, which is not true, Buddhism is not God, Jainism is not God. But turn to spirituality is one. So what is oneness is more subtle. Arriving at oneness, which is the subtlest, that is the secret. The manifestations of the one in many forms, which is bound to be diverse. Recognition of these two principles is at the basis of Indian culture.
Vedanta
of various kinds, even Vedanta, how many forms?
But the fundamental principle of Advaita.
Advaita is one. But that one is recognized. This identity of one and multiplicity of many, and many rooted in the one, this principle has been exemplified in India. It's not merely spoken of. It's exemplified. This is the great work of the rishis. You know why we have to look into the rishis' vision, which people today do not understand when you speak of rishis of India. They deliberately engineered society. They were great planners of society. It is not, this culture has not come up pell-mell. There has been a design. They were teachers, educators. They created a deliberate system of education. This is not understood properly. The Indian culture, Ramayana, Mahabharata are not poems written by one Homer for the sake of describing a big siege of Troy. The Sri Aurobindo says, Ramayana Mahabharata were deliberately written for education of the people. They were not written for the sake of poetic expression. Now this is what is not understood by many people. Ramayana Mahabharata is not like Odyssey. It's not like Iliad. They were expressions of poets, expression and experience of Siege of Troy, that's all. Ramayana was not a poet's experience. He wanted to describe an experience. No. The dialogue between Narada and Rama and Valmiki at the very beginning which is given is very particular. Where Valmiki says, I want to describe an example of the highest virtues put together. Is there any example? Then I will write on him. It is not as if he selected Ramayana story among many stories which he liked very much and he expressed for his poetic genius. Not at all. It is written for education of the people. It makes all the difference. Similarly, Mahabharata is not written by Vyasa. He wanted to teach the lesson of things to the people. Shanti Parva is the fundamental point in Mahabharata. What is the cause of war? How war has to be engineered? How war should aim at peace? And what is the price of that peace? What is to be given? Peace is not merely slogan of peace. You people unite together. It's not that simple thing. Unity is very difficult. To bring human beings together in a peaceful condition is one of the most difficult tasks. No, it's the truth. It's a fact.
One can see.
Why Vyasa wrote this Mahabharata?
It's just to give this example.
The main theme is Shanti Parva. How Sri Krishna was one of the greatest unifier in the history of the world, who did not merely preach unity, he jumped into the Mahabharata war. The Mahabharata, he is the maker of the Mahabharata war. So that war is fought in such a way that ultimate unity is established. Because war can be fought also in supremacy of one over the other. But that was not the aim of Sri Krishna to make one power superior to the other. That was not his aim, Dharmarajya. He wanted Yudhishthira to be the king. Why? Because Yudhishthira was a universal man. He selected that man. And although he was a weak man, although he had many defects, he was not a divine man that way. Gambling and all kind of vices he had. But still, he was a Dharmarajya. So, he was the one who studied the political situation of his time most deeply. I don't think any leader of the world history can compare with Sri Krishna in his knowledge of his political situation of his times. You examine any leader of the world. Examine any historical figure. You read the Mahabharata and you see Sri Krishna knows every great man of his time. He knows his strengths and weaknesses of every one of them. No, without making a good study, you can't do it. It's like today, for example, who knows all the leaders of India? Tell me, one by. You should have one leader like Akhil, who should really say, I know most of the leaders of India. You know, Abhay Kashyap who comes to, you know Abhay Kashyap. He knows many leaders of India which hardly anybody knows about. He knows that Shivraj Patil, for example, built up Parliament Annex. He's a very nice man. But you ask him the question, why did he build up a Parliament Annex? What is the personal profit involved in it? 100 crore. At that time it was built. If you are a speaker of parliament, ultimate design of parliament will be decided by the people. Those who are to derive benefit out of the construction will be decided by the speaker. All the powers are centered in the speaker. You build a huge complex called Parliament Annex. What is 100 crores? Now this story not anybody knows very simply. Like that, there should be some people in India who have knowledge of all the prominent leaders of India. Who knows it? Sri Krishna knew about everybody. He knew that Karna was not Sarathi Putra. He knew that Karna was the son of Kunti. He knew. Even when Bhima and Yudhishthira did not know, but he knew about it. And he knew when exactly to go to Karna, after Kunti has visited him, so that he is sure that he is Kunti's son, and then offers him Chakravarti's position, which Karna rejects. But he goes at that time. Why does he go at that time? When he cannot doubt it anymore. Because the mother herself has told this, her son, you are my son. So it cannot be doubted. So he goes only at that time, Sri Krishna, when he has not to prove it at all. He's already proved to him. But Karna understands that this man knew me quite well, much before anybody knew me. Similarly, if you see the whole Mahabharata's exposition of the Mahabharata, right from his time when he was a chieftain of Mathura, migrating to Dwarka, even that was a tremendous retreat for him. He knew Jarasandh cannot be conquered because of his mighty power. He advised everybody, please migrate from Mathura and go to a safer place and build up your strength. And he took them all to Dwarka, established a kingdom, very powerful kingdom. He knew that Dwarka will be always a small nation, a small country, small power. He examined that the two greatest powers in the world, in the India at that time, was Kaurava power. Other was Jarasandh power. These were the two great powers at that time. Among Kauravas, however, he found there is a big quarrel between two clans, Kauravas and Pandavas. He made a study of everybody and he came to the conclusion that if Kauravas are supported, Jarasandh can be conquered. All other kings of the time can be subdued by the Kaurava power. The only problem was Duryodhana. He was very mighty, powerful, clever, cunning. He knew the story very well. He selected Yudhishthira because of his fundamental drive towards dharma. That was a great favorable circumstance. So he built up a good relationship with Pandavas from their early times, and he took advantage of his own personal connection with Kunti. So he was a relative of the whole family. He was a relative also of Kauravas. The whole Kaurava family, he had a good connection. But he saw the weaknesses and strengths of both the parties. And even at the time of Mahabharata war, he gives his whole army in favor of Kauravas. Only himself, only with Pandavas. Why he did this? Because he knew that if Pandavas win easily, Pandavas had with them Viraj. It was a big kingdom. Panchal was a big kingdom. And there are some other big kingdoms. Drupad, for example, was a very powerful king. Draupadi herself was a very powerful woman, and her father and her brothers were also very powerful. And they would not allow Dharmarajya to flourish. They were not Dharmarajya. Only Yudhishthira and these five brothers, more or less, were tuned to Dharmarajya. So he had to give his big army to Kauravas so that they all could kill all the people. Ultimately, all Virats were finished, Panchals were finished, everyone was finished. On this side, these also were finished. He used these people to finish those people, these people to these people. Ultimately, there remained only five princes. Then Dharmarajya was safe. Yudhishthira was able to do his real Dharmarajya. Why, for example, there is a beautiful article of Sri Aurobindo, The Political Story of Mahabharata. It's one of the most insightful statements of Sri Aurobindo, which one must read. Why Bhishma, the great Bhishma, why he sided with the Kauravas and not with Pandavas? He was equal to both the parties. I mean, he was a grandfather. Ostensible reason given is, I have been serving my kingdom, I cannot now change my party. It's only outer. You think such a great man, he was only for that reason he joined this Kauravas. The reason was that Bhishma knew the greatness of Pandavas. But he knew that Pandavas were completely under the thumb of Drupad, Panchal, Virat, great powers. And they will not allow Yudhishthira the freedom to rule. If Yudhishthira wins the war, Virat will be the winner, not Kauravas, not Pandavas either. Therefore, Bhishma gave his word, I will never kill the five Pandavas, but I'll kill all his allies. And he sided with Duryodhana and others, not out of great happiness, but he was a politician. And he saw that if he sided with Pandavas, ultimately he'll be siding with Virat. This is not a great thing to do, because power will go to those people. Hastinapur will be finished. So he had a big problem. He did not know, like Shri Krishna, this strategy of bringing about a complete massacre. It may seem that Sri Krishna preferred a complete massacre, but that was because most of the people of Indian rulers at that time were all evil. It was Glani Bhavati Bharata at that time. It was real Glani. And all over, everyone was sinful. Small kingdom wanting to have his supremacy and becoming Chakravarti. This was the whole difficulty. So he found in that very difficult condition, Pandavas were the only power which, if they won the war, there was a possibility of establishment of a real peace in the world. This is why the Bhagavad Gita is a message of Shanti. He says, even when you kill, have samatvam. Ahimsa, he speaks of ahimsa as a part of his dharma and says that in your consciousness there should be no anger. Kama, krodha, all that should go. You are doing this work only because the Lord wants you to kill, therefore you kill. but not because there is a pleasure in killing. It's the most difficult lesson. I mean, anybody teaching in the Gita to say to your own disciple, you fight but have no anger in your heart. It may seem such an impossible task. What is Sri Krishna teaching? But he knew Arjuna can do it. And ultimate aim was this only, to establish peace in the world. Similarly today, we have the same similar problem. Today all the nations are rushing towards globalization. You are obliged to, you cannot help it. And all the nations will try towards model of modern Europe. Unify the whole of Europe. Now Asia also do the same thing. Africa do the same thing. America doing the same thing. All unity means uniformity. Same currency, same language. That question also will come up in Europe. Which language will be more powerful? Once again French will try to become lingua franca. Why not? Or German will try to become lingua franca of the whole of Europe. There should be an effort of it. So we have got to understand the problem. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, is necessity and dangers. Unity is very good. It's necessary. But what are the dangers? The danger is very great. That's why Sri Aurobindo has written several chapters here on the move toward uniformity. What are the forces? You see, there are, Sri Aurobindo has written here, first of all, economic centralization, which is already on, economic centralization. Then, legislative centralization, social decentralization, and then, ultimately, the idea of one uniform state, one world state, that also is already on. People say you should have one world and have America as a chief. One world, they all stand for one world. Because today they know that America will be the only power which can create the whole world. So why not one world? But because America will be the supreme. The American Empire.
One world based on the models of America.
That's right, exactly.
Because, in a way, is it because Americans already succeeded in the experiment of being able to unify and progress by so much different migrations from all over the world? So much.
It is true in a certain sense. American polity is a new creation of nature. That is why America is so important. America has done something which is very valuable. And yet Americanism is a great danger for the world.
Twisting.
So, we have to be very, very careful. You cannot do without America, and if you do with America anything, you are doomed as far as Indian culture is concerned.
In fact, any culture are doomed because of America doesn't have a culture.
No, you can see everybody is bearing now this kind of, with so many advertisements in India. I mean, hardly anybody you find whose shirt does not bear some kind of Boston on it. No? Every child in India today is Bostonized. So, this is the danger of the movement of today.
But my question started with that, how do we reverse it? By promoting individualism.
There are four movements to be done. First, we need to study different forms of government. Today we have only one form of government. Parliamentary form of government. Democratic form of government. It has got two forms, presidential form and parliamentary form. But basically both of them are parliamentary forms. Senate and House of Representatives in America is same thing like what you have got, upper house and lower house in India. Only you have got a cabinet system, there is a presidential system. So first of all, forms of government have to be examined. We believe today that electing people is the only means by which you can keep society safe. This is the form which great Plato criticized. Why? He said that if democracy is a form of government, men like Socrates will be in danger. They will not be tolerated by democracy, and these people will be killed. And this is quite true. Today, Brahmakshatriyas and Kshatriyas are not allowed to flourish. Why? Because democracy will necessarily imply election. Election will imply a lot of money needed for election. It is not by virtue of your merits that you will be elected. You will be elected only because you meet many people. And you can meet people only if you have got financial backing. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo says, democracy will reduce itself to plutocracy. You can take it for granted. You start with any kind of eulogy of democracy. Democracy means plutocracy. Plutocracy means rule of the few wicked rich people.
This is exactly what is taking place.
Correct?
Exactly.
Yes. Sri Aurobindo said it really in this idea of humanity.
Because in Rajasthan I can see it very...
Absolutely. There is no other alternative. Well, not only Rajasthan, anywhere. Obama and McCain, you think they can win any kind of election without a lot of money? What are their caucuses and all that? So first is democracy, Sri Aurobindo says. We have got to create a form of government where the advantages of democracy are to be retained. It's not as if democracy is the wrong thing. You have to find a remedy how to get new form of election. Why should you have a form of election in which you go to people and shout and you get elected? Why should you have that system? It is up to you to decide how will you elect. Do you have a new system of election? Can you make Tata, J.R.E. Tata to become the president of India? Present form will not allow it. Even though Tata himself has got money, he will not be allowed to become the President of India or Prime Minister of India. Because there are many other plutocrats against him. And
he cannot stoop to their level.
And he will not go around to the people saying, vote for me. Lalu Prasad can go easily. But Tata will not go. So how to make Tata, for example, a Prime Minister of India? Let us see. If you put this simple question, immediately democracy will be measured in its two terms. So first of all, Sri Aurobindo says, you have to see a form of government in which the merits of every form of government is presented. Monarchy is a very good thing. It is we who have thrown away monarchy without considering rightly. Monarch can be a very great power, provided monarch is a wise man. What Plato said, guardian philosopher, he made him a philosopher. Why Chanakya gave his, in Arthashastra, Chanakya gave a timetable of the king. He also gave how the king has to be trained. How the king is actually praja hite atma hitam, praja sukhe atma sukham. This is the ideal. A monarch is not one like Gyanendra sitting in his chamber and shooting his brothers. It is one who, like Sri Rama, who even knowing that his wife is innocent, he exiles her. Why? Because people felt that their own morality cannot be sustained when such an example is at the helm of affairs. And in that time, Sri Rama bowed to that will of the people, knowingly. If you read the dialogue between Sri Rama and Lakshmana and Shatrughna and Bharata, just before exile, he says, I know she is pure, but my people, they do not understand. Now you may today criticize him, because we are ultra-modern, but that democracy of a monarch, in a democracy, would Rama would have been elected if his wife had gone to Sri Lanka? No, in democracy he would have been failing. Anyway, Sri Rama could not have been elected in a democracy. And particularly after his wife came back, he would not have been accepted by the people. So what democracy would not have allowed him, he accepted himself, voluntarily. Such was the king. So monarchy need not be dictatorial. It should train the king properly. So first of all, monarchy also has to be retained in the true polity. Aristocracy, for example, is also another form. What is called oligarchy. Monarchy, oligarchy is another form of government. Now, is oligarchy a good form of government? No. A few people going round about the court and they control the whole country. It's also not a good form of government. But if these very people can be made use of them, you create a small place for them, nourish them, nurture them in the right way, don't give too many powers to them. Restrict them within certain powers, it will be a wonderful flower in the polity of the country. Democracy also is good. All different forms of government, each form of government is good. But we do not know how to harmonize them. So Sri Aurobindo says, the future world will be one in which a new form of government will arise, which will be monarchical, aristocratic and democratic at the same time. Element of each one will be present. And each one will work against the other, the will of the others. And what will happen will be a new form, and that is what we should do. And that will be a kind of a movement against uniformity. The very form of government is not uniform. You have only one form of government. So you flourish in uniformity. Secondly, you emphasize decentralization. Today, decentralization is not at all understood. Give a great importance to languages and diversity of languages, which you are not giving. We do not know the power of language. As Sri Aurobindo says, language is a creative power. One of the great things that happened in India to preserve Indian culture was the birth of 12 national languages at the time when Muslims came and invaded India. Not many people understand this great fact which has happened in India. Sanskrit was gone. Pali had become almost obsolete by that time. Muslims came and invaded India and we were completely dumbfounded. We did not know how to deal with this power. One of the ways by which India rose is to create 12 languages in India, major languages. You read all the history of the present languages of India, it's only 800 years old. Hindi, Bengali, Gujarati, in 800 years, he produced 12 new languages. Imagine the creativity of India. No, it's not a joke. Why? Because our rishis knew the power of language. They said, you try, all our great saints, they wrote in the regional languages. All our Puranas, Vedas, Upanishads, all translated to regional languages. Gyaneshwari in Marathi, for example, that one saint arose and he wrote the whole Gita and wrote Gyaneshwari in Marathi language. Tulsidas came and wrote Ramayana into what is the language? Braj? Avadhi. Avadhi, huh? Avadhi language, no? Or regional languages. Indian culture was survived because of this new language. So, new world will give a great importance to diversity of languages. You will not allow hegemony of one language. Because diversity of language is a great creative power. Similarly, give great importance to individual. You write one full chapter on Sri Aurobindo's philosophy of the individual and the collectivity. Actually, I would recommend you to read this particular portion first, before doing anything, because it is a central point